So in Parshas Vayetzeh, obviously, we're dealing with Yaakov Avinu leaving, going to Laban's house. As the Rashi we learned last week shows us that, or this past Sunday shows us that, although the Torah indicates he went straight to Laban's house, there in fact was a detour to the yeshiva in Shein V'Ever that lasted 14 years. And during those 14 years, the Medrash literally says that Yaakov never slept. Now, if you read, now, here's the question for us. In other words, if we understand the Medrash to mean he didn't sleep, then obviously you're talking about a supernatural miracle. But if you look at the language of the Medrash literally, the language actually says he did not go into a bed for 14 years. Now, that actually is a different meaning, because that means that he never had a kvias of Shina, meaning he would drowse off a little bit, etc., but he never gave himself the comfort, because he only slept the bare minimum. And we know that, although this is not recommended for us, because we're a weaker generation, but we know that Gedolim, like the Vilna Gaon, actually only slept 2 hours a night for many, many years. And those 2 hours was interspersed into 4 one-half-hour periods. So, you know, a human being can do these things, but although it's not recommended that we try. The Rambam says a person can sleep 8 hours a night. Although I can tell you the Rambam's own schedule, he did not sleep 8 hours a night. But as a doctor, you know, he advised people to do it. But they tell him, I saw the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon once went to a chasna, which is very rare, very, very rare. But for whatever reason, he went to a chasna in some town. And when he went, you know, people would, he was staying in the second floor of some building, so people would, like, stand on a ladder. They would take turns just to watch him learning, or just to watch him eating, or just to watch him sleeping, whatever it would be. And the story goes that when he was taking his half-hour naps, in that city he slept for 35 minutes. And people saw when he woke up how he was crying and sorrowing himself and berating himself, and he's saying, I lost, how could I lose this? And he said that he would never come back to this city again. He called it the sleeping city, the city that made him sleep. But for whatever reason, like 25 years later, he came back to the city, and when he took his nap, he got up after 25 minutes. And he says, and the city was like, so at Baruch Hashem, and the Masaka and everything worked out, you know. Worked out for the best. But this is the idea of the 14 years of the yeshiva of Shein V'Ever. But then, what happens is he's going to Chutz La'aretz, and the pasuk says that Vayipka b'makam, he encountered the place, Vayolin, the place, doesn't say what place, the place, Vayolin Shem, he lodged there, Kivo HaShemesh, because the sun went down, okay? Vayikach miavnei hamakam, he took the stones, and remember Chazal say all the stones consolidated into a single stone, and he slept, and then he had the great, great dream of Hashem appearing to him, and Hashem promising him that I will protect you, I will guard you, and I will bring you back to Eretz Yisrael. That was the great dream that Yaakov was given, the great reassurance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, there's a very, very complicated Rashi that basically says, where was this place? Because after all, the pasuk begins, Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva. It says, Yaakov left Be'er Sheva. That's where Yitzchak is. Be'er Sheva is where Be'er Sheva is today. It's in the Negev. Vayelech Haran, and he went to Haran. Now, that would suggest he already got to Haran. So the Torah is moving in a backwards way. It says he goes from A to Z, and then it says he stops somewhere in the middle, right? How do you understand that? So Rashi says that Yaakov actually backtracked. That Yaakov initially had a miraculous siyata d'shmaya, what is called a contracting of the makam. He left Be'er Sheva, he got to Haran, that's a distance of around 1,000 miles. But then Yaakov basically said, so a selection of the Rashi. That he is not able, says, how can I pass by? Because if you go from Be'er Sheva to Haran, you pass by Yerushalayim, you pass by Har HaMoriah, you pass by the Temple Mount. So Yaakov says, how can I not, as it were, go past the Temple Mount and not stop and be mispallel to Hashem? So he actually backtracked towards the Temple Mount. But then it gets very complicated, because on the other hand, we are told the place where Yaakov had his dream was not Yerushalayim or Har Moriah, but rather it was a place called Luz that Yaakov named as Beis El, the house of God, which he saw as the kingdom, as the house of Hashem, the gateway to Shemayim. So what was it? Did Yaakov have his dream in Har Moriah? Did Yaakov have his dream in Luz, which is called Beis El, etc.? So Rashi explains that essentially the base of the ladder, I'm going to see the Lashon of here, because it is a complicated Rashi. Rashi says, this is a statement from the Elazar B'Shem Rav Yossi Ben Zimra. Hasulam Hazeh Omeg B'Ber Sheva. The base of the ladder is Ber Sheva. Yaakov is dreaming, and he's under a gigantic ladder. The base of the ladder is Be'er Sheva, because that is the home of his father Yitzchak, and that was the home of Avraham Avinu after the Akedah. Emtza Shipuo Magia Keneged Beis HaMikdash, She'Be'er Sheva Omeid B'Droma Shel Yehuda, Yerushalayim B'Tzvona, U'Beis El Hoya B'Tzvon Shel Nachlas Binyamin. So basically, the concept is this. The ladder, its base is in Be'er Sheva. The top of the ladder is Beis El. And therefore Beis El, where Yaakov is sleeping, he's sleeping under the top of the ladder. Beis El is the Shara Shamayim, is the gateway of heaven, because the angels are coming and going from the top of the ladder. And Rashi explains, the angels going down are the angels of Chutz La'aretz that are coming down to be Malavahim. The angels going up are the angels of Eretz Yisrael that are leaving, a changing of the guard. So what's the connection to Yerushalayim? So Rashi says, this is kind of geometrically, Beis El is north of Yerushalayim, and Charan, you're going north. Be'er Sheva is south of Yerushalayim. So if you were to kind of have a ladder at a diagonal slant going from Be'er Sheva to Beis El, where Yaakov is, the middle of that Shipua, the middle point, the midpoint, is going to be Har HaMoriah, as it is. And therefore, in a sense, Yerushalayim is involved, because it is, according to the Medrash that Rashi quotes, Yerushalayim is the midpoint of that ladder. Yerushalayim, as it were, is where the angels meet as they're going up and down, and that's essentially where they get their mission and they get their marching orders, right? The angels, as it were, leave the Shara Shemayim in Beis El. That's how the Medrash that Rashi brings is, that in point of fact, Yaakov himself is not in Har HaMoriah. Yaakov is in Beis El, which is north, but the Emtza Shipua of the ladder, the middle of the slant, is over Yerushalayim. Now, there are other Midrashim that say quite differently, because there are other Midrashim that actually say that since Hashem didn't want Yaakov to backtrack all the way back to Yerushalayim, what happened was, miraculously, Hashem contracted or compacted the soil, so to speak. Sartre understands this concept. And he literally brought the holiness of Har HaMoriah under Yaakov's body in Beis El. So Yaakov is in Beis El, but in fact he's in Har HaMoriah at the same time. Because Baruch Hu took the ground and moved it over. Okay. Now, it says that Yaakov stopped because the sun sets. So Rashi brings again a medrash that says that the sun set suddenly. It was still the middle of the day. Solar eclipse or total sunset, and right? So Yaakov stopped. So the Ramban says, this is a tremendous, very, very interesting remes, because everything that happens to the Avos is a simon of the Banim. We say, Maisa Avos, simon labanim. The Pasuk says in V'yeschanach, this is the somewhat of an introduction. Next week we'll do the history of Hanukkah just for a day or so. Maisa Ava Simin Labana. Now, what was it? The first Beis HaMikdash stood how many years? 410 years. That means from Shlomo HaMelech, who built the first temple, to the Chorban, was 410 years. How many years were the Jews in Eretz Yisrael before they built the Beis HaMikdash? We know from the book of Malachim, 440 years. So, from the time they entered Eretz Yisrael till the Churban, 850 years. It's an important number. The Yidden were in Eretz Yisrael 850 years, and then the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and we have the Babylonian Golos. In Parshas V'Yeshanan, when Moshe Rabbeinu was given a Nevuah in the Torah, that there will be a Golos, and this is the Kriyas HaTorah of Tisha B'Av morning. Ki solid banim uvnei banim, when you have children and grandchildren, then no shantem ba'aretz. Yashan is to be old, and you will have become habituated in the land, and you will worship idols and do bad things. Hashem says, I testify by this very day, you shall be destroyed. Now, Rashi brings from the Sifri that Vinoshantem is a gematria. You shall be in the land a long time. You shall be ancient in the land. So let's add up Vinoshantem. Vav Nun Vav Shin Nun Tuf Mem. So that's 440, 490, 790, and 50 is 840. I'm not adding it right here. You should get 410 and 440. You should get 852 is what you want to get. So that's the answer. So you get 852. Let's see. 40 and tough, that's 440. Nun is 490. And shin is 790. And another 50 is 840. Oh, I'm sorry, I skipped the vav. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Again. 440, 490, 790, 796, and 50 is 844, and the other vav is 850. Okay? So Rashi says the following. No, I'm sorry, I'm still missing something. Let's make problem here, 1 second. I know that's the answer. For some reason, my mind is not adding up numbers today, but it's 852. So the Midrash says the following. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Meyit. If we would have been in the land of Israel for 852 years, and we would have been enmeshed in Chatoyim for that period of time, Hashem says we would have been totally destroyed. We would have been irredeemable. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought the Golos 2 years earlier than the minion of Vinoshantem, so that we didn't fill our quota of sin, and therefore he did not have to do his side of avod to avod in maher. Which is an amazing idea, because sometimes you might think, oh, if Hashem brings the Golus earlier, Hashem is punishing us. But you see, no, it's the midas harachamim, that we didn't have a fulfillment of the minyan of Vinoshantem. Because Vinoshantem is 852, and we were only there for 850. So the Ramban says, the idea of Yaakov Avinu, who's experiencing Golus, and darkness is a remez to Golus, right? Darkness is a remez to Golus. The lesson here is, the sun set earlier than it ordinarily will, to be merames, that the Golos will take place earlier than it ordinarily should have. Okay, so Shaka Chama Shalo B'Yainasa is a remez to Hiktim Shtei Shanim Laminyan Vino Shantem. Okay, you see the connection. Now, the other thing is the Gemara derives from the following. Vayifka Bamakaim Bayolan Shem. Yaakov encountered the place, and according to the message that I told you, he actually encounters Hara Moria, which somehow gets compacted under him. So Chazal have a drasha. Vayifka means to encounter. But do you remember the Gemara in Brachos? That encounter is also a lashon of tefillah. Vayifka Bamakaim. And this is the place where Yaakov Avinu was misaken the practice of davening Ma'ariv. Right, the Gemara in Brachos tells us, Avraham enacted the minhag of Shachris, Yitzchak enacted Mincha, Yaakov enacted Ma'ariv. Now, we don't mean Kriyashma. Kriyashma is a separate mitzvah in the Torah. But the idea of davening Ma'ariv, Shemona Esrei. Now again, it wasn't Shemona Esrei either, but the idea of turning to Hashem in prayer at night, technically, we'll call it a drabbanan really. It's a rabbinic enactment, so to speak, that was enacted by Yaakov Avinu as a practice to be followed by himself and his children. He didn't have any children yet. And that is derived from the word vayifka, pigia, encountering, is a lashon of tefillah. Right? And this is Yaakov was misaken tefillah sarvis. Just a little word generally. What is the status of the mitzvah of davening anyway? We know that the Torah says morning and evening we are mechuyev to say kriyashma. Right? So kriyashma is a doraisa. What about tefillah, prayer? Is davening a mitzvah doraisa or is it a mitzvah derabbanan? So the emes is there's a big, big machlokas, the Rambam, and the Ramban, is there such a thing as a mitzvah that is called tefillah? According to the Ramban, tefillah is a chiyuv d'oraisa every single day. Every single day, the Torah commands us to pray to God. Now, the Ramban says the following. The text of tefillah, Shemona Esrei, everything else, that clearly is rabbinic from the people of the Great Assembly, the Anshei Knesset HaGdola. Moreover, the Rambam says, davening three times a day is not min haTorah, but the Torah requires once a day a person turns to Hashem in prayer. It's a mitzvah, 613 mitzvahs. What mitzvah is it? Uliyavto b'chol v'avchem. You shall serve Hashem with all of your heart, we say in Shema. So what is serving Hashem with your heart? That is called tefillah. Very important. Tefillah is not called serving Hashem with your mouth. It's called serving Hashem with your heart. So according to the Rambam, tefillah exists on two tracks. To pray once a day to Hashem in any words of your choosing, that's the oraisa. Three times a day with a nusach, that's midrabbanan. Ramban, Nachmanides Ramban, is cholek on the Rambam. The Ramban says the Torah does not mandate or require that a person pray to Hashem. The Torah, of course, prohibits one to pray to anyone other than Hashem. That's Avodah Zarah. But the Ramban says there is only a chiyuv to pray to Hashem when you have an eis tzara, when you're faced with adversity, suffering, calamity, you are then supposed to turn to Hashem in prayer, but on a daily basis, there is no chiyuv. Now, be it as it may, everybody's moda. Both Rambam and Ramban are moda that three tefillahs is not doraisa, and as a result, we can still talk about Avram enacting that you should daven shachris, Yitzchak enacting mincha, and Yaakov enacting ma'ariv. But the point is, so it's an old rabbinic letter. It's a rabbinic letter that at least goes back to the Avos. So according to the Rambam, you have two tracks of prayer. The Doraisa requirement and a rabbinic requirement that's superimposed. According to Ramban, everything is midrabbanan. There is no Torah requirement. Yeah.
So the Rambam, the Ramban say that Was it a separate mitzvah to daven an eighth sara, or would he just count that mitzvah? Would he discount the mitzvah?
No, he does count it from another verse. Right. He does say there's a mitzvah to pray to Hashem the eighth sara. Now it's interesting.
Would that substitute what the Rambam says is?
So that would equal the number of mitzvahs be equal to that. It's interesting. The Brisker Rav, Rav Chaim said the Brisker Rav. Always had the habits. Whenever he was worried about something, he would always say, "The Eibishter is all helpful. The Eibishter is all helpful, even over small things. The Eibishter should help. The Eibishter should help." And he seemed to say it in a bit of an agitated way. So people thought that's because the Brisker Rav was nervous. He seemed nervous. He's a nervous temperament, almost like a tick. But the explanation is, this is a bit subtle. He was nervous. But he wasn't nervous about the problem. He was nervous because he was halachically mesupik whether the problem rose to the level of a sara that would be machayev him in tefillah d'oraisa. So he always said the Eibishter should help to be machayev the mitzvah, that in case it's an a sara, in other words, he wasn't sure if a small problem, you know, when does a small problem become a time of sara? So he was always saying the Eibishter Zalhelten, not because he was intrinsically worried about the problem, but he was worried whether he had a chiyuv to daven because it's an Eisara.
Does the Rambam agree with the Ramban that one must daven in a time of Taurus?
He does not specifically address it. Okay. So as far as the Rambam is concerned, there may not be a special obligation. But I think it would be almost implicit in believing in Hashem. Meaning to say, in a sense, the Rambam's argument could be, the Rambam does count in mitzvah to believe in Hashem. Right? So maybe the Rambam says, well, it stands to reason. If I believe that Hashem creates the world and controls the world, that I will pray to Him in a time of tzara. In other words, you don't need a commandment. Pray to the Supreme Creator and the one who runs the universe when you're in trouble. That a person will do naturally. So therefore it doesn't become a mitzvah per se. Now I want to point out there's a very interesting practical halachic nafkamina between the Rambam and the Ramban even today, and that is whether women have to daven. This is very fascinating. The Mishnah says b'feirush in Maseches Brachos that although women are exempt from Shema, because Shema is a time-bound commandment, without an exception, women do not have to say Shema, although the custom is they do say it, but they're putter from Shema, but a woman does have to pray. Now the question is, what is the chiyuv of a woman in davening? So, paradoxically, according to the Rambam, a woman's chiyuv will be less, because according to the Rambam, a woman is chayeves only in the da'oraisa of tefillah. Because the da'oraisa of tefillah is not siman drama. You could daven any time during the day. So according to Rambam, a woman does not have to daven shachris or mincha or ma'ariv. A woman only has to daven, in her own words, to Hashem once a day. And that could be as minimal as moda ani, could be prayer, or morning brachos could be prayer. According to the Rambam, a woman is not mechuyevet. I mean, the reason is pashut, because tefillah, according to the Rambam, is not an exception to zman drama. Rather, the part of tefillah that's time-bound, namely the drabanan, a woman is patur from. The part of tefillah she's chayevis is not time-bound. So according to the Rambam, that tefillah is the araisa, a woman only has to say morning brachos or even less. Maybe even mozani would be enough. Or something in Yiddish, called the Yiddish Tchila. Today would be English probably, but in Europe many women would say a Yiddish paragraph, you know, asking Hashem to give their family a bracha. But according to the Ramban, you don't have a d'oraisa in the normal event, at least on a daily basis. So according to Ramban, if the Mishnah says women are chayavas and tefillah, it means they have the same chayav as men. So the Mishnah Brura is machriya like the Ramban, that it's proper for women to daven Shachris and Mincha. Now, Ma'ariv is a little different, because even for men, Ma'ariv is treated as an optional prayer, although we have to understand that. If Yaakov was misakin it, why is that so? But the Mishmer does say women have to daven Shachris and Mincha. This is what they teach in Beis Yaakov and everything else. But one has to be honest that indeed many, many poskim, the Magen Avraham, follows the Rambam's Shita. And in fact, without being irreverent, from when I've read, the Chafetz Chaim's mother probably did not daven a shacharis and a mincha. The custom among even righteous women in Europe was to just say a techina, and like many of them couldn't read. Of course, you can daven in other languages, but you know they were not literate in Lashon HaKodesh. So this is an interesting paradox, where the Rambam who makes tefillah d'oraisa will be lenient for women. The Ramban that makes tefillah d'rabbanan is going to be more obligatory for women, because the Mishnah says women are chayav in tefillah. According to the Ramban, there's no d'oraisa level to which you can latch a woman to, so she must be chayav in the whole thing. It's a zman gerava. The answer is Ramban understands that tefillah is so important that even though it's a zman gerava, a woman has to daven. Meaning it's yet another exception, like Kiddush and the like. This also has an interesting ramification Shabbos morning, because the halacha is like this. The halacha is that once you're chayav in Kiddush, you're not allowed to have water till you make Kiddush. But you're not chayav in Kiddush till after you daven shachris. So on Shabbos morning, before I daven shachris, I can have water without Kiddush. And some people are nekel with juice and coffee. I don't want to get into that. But in other words, you're allowed to, whatever you're allowed to have before davening, generally, whatever that is, you're allowed to have Shabbos morning without Kiddush. But that's only until you daven shachris. Once you daven shachris, you cannot have anything till you make Kiddush. You understand the idea? Now, a woman, since according to Rambam, a woman has been yotzei her shachris davening, just with morning brachos, so it might very well be that as soon as a woman has said morning brachos, she cannot have anything till she makes kiddush. It's an interesting point. You see what I'm saying? In other words, because a woman's shachris definition is not as strict as a man, her chiyuv of saying kiddush kicks in at an earlier point. Now, Rav Moshe has a tshuva that we don't say that by a married woman, because he says a married woman follows her husband, even with respect to the definition of when she's done shachris, etc. But at least a single woman, like her, a single girl, would have to make kiddush as soon as she says morning brachos.
She can't say her own kiddush, can she?
Of course, yeah, absolutely. Why not?
Because I've never actually seen it, but always seen the man do it for the whole family.
No, a woman can absolutely say it. And not only that, a woman can even be motzing a man in kiddush, because men and women in kiddush, per se, are identically obligated. So a wife, now again, it wouldn't be tznius for a single girl to say kiddush for other men, but if it was necessary, a wife could make kiddush for her husband.
So how come I've never, ever seen a woman make kiddush for her husband in my whole life?
Well, it's just a question of, we tend to have roles where the husband is the one who does the spiritual ceremonies and the like. Have you seen men light Shabbos candles? You've probably seen here, like, but, in a typical home, the woman lights Shabbos candles, and this is the division
of
labor.
Well, she's chayiv and we're not, is that correct?
That's not true. No, we're both chayiv. You're both chayiv, absolutely. Men are chayiv. If you're a widow or a single man or whatever it is, you absolutely have to light Shabbos candles.
So it's just a non-halachic gender identity thing. That
basically. In fact, let me ask you another question. Have you ever seen, I don't know if you've had occasion, three women be mezamim, make rabosai, or not rabosai, but gavi rotai?
No,
and this is not taught in Beis Yaakov's either, and yet the Gemara says beferish, and that's halach in Shulchan Aruch, that if three women want to make a mezumah, they can make a mezumah. Now it's not a chiyuv, it's a rishus, but they're allowed to, and yet this is something that's not taught at all.
In fact,
they get reward of someone doing a mitzvah, they're not obligated to. In fact, there's an interesting halacha that, let's say you have three women and two men who are eating together. Now, men and women don't combine. Two women, one man, two men, one woman, they cannot make a mezumah, that's for sure. But, and if you have three men and three women, it's better for the men to do it because that's a chiyuv. But let's say you have this configuration. Three women and two men. So the two men can't be mezamein. The halacha is a woman can lead zimun and the men are allowed to answer.
The three women have to lead.
Yes. Well, one of the three women. That's right. One of the women has to be one of the leaders, not one of the men.
Yes.
You only have two men. So somebody was teaching this in a more modern yeshiva, and there's a frum girl there who said, I don't believe that. That doesn't sound right. You're telling me the men have to, the women do it, and the men answer. She says, I don't believe it. She says to the teacher. So they were planning a trip to Israel. She says, okay, listen, when we get to Eretz Israel, we'll go to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and we'll ask him. So he brings his class to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and the question was raised, if you have three women and two men, are the three women allowed to have a mezuzah? So Rav Auerbach says, yeah, they're allowed to. He says, should the two men answer? So Rav Shlomo Zalman said, absolutely they should answer, because the women are entitled to make a zilin, and there would be a mitzvah for the men to answer. So the girl blurted out, that can't be right. You know, she said it to him. She just couldn't control herself. But that is all. And now, the point is, you have probably never seen that either. Right? So that's the whole issue. But again, you know, we live in what you might call slippery slope times, meaning to say, because feminism has so many excesses, and feminism does so many things kneged halacha, that sometimes in the rim worlds, we go to the other extreme, not to give any legitimacy. You know, like people used to say, well, if we can put a man on the moon, why can't we solve world hunger, right? You know, this everything. Or why don't we have a cure for cancer? So people say, well, if women can have Zeman, why can't a woman be a Rosh Hashiva? You know, it's that type of illogical thing. So because of that, there is a built-in small-c conservatism not to allow things that are, you know, perfectly okay. Zeman is perfectly okay. A woman making Kiddush for a man is perfectly okay. Havdalah is different. Havdalah is a more complicated question because it's not so clear a woman is chayav than Havdalah. She hears Havdalah just in case, but it's not so pashut. But Kiddush, she definitely has a chayav.
Why aren't candidates in Kiddush not
No, they are. They are. But they are exceptions, meaning to say, since Shamor and Zachor were said by Hashem the same time, miraculously, and Shamor is the negative of Shabbos, don't do work. So the Gemara has a drasha, whoever has the negative of Shabbos also has the positive of Shabbos. And therefore, even though it's a mitzvah saseh shazman gerama, women are chayiv. There are many exceptions. In fact, in point of fact, there are probably more exceptions than there are the rule. A woman is chayiv in Kiddush, even though it's zman gerama. A woman is chayiv in Haggadah, in Dalit Kosos, in eating matzah, okay? Even though it's zman gerama. All of this is from a drasha. On the other hand, a woman is putter from shofar, even though the custom is to hear it. A woman is putter from sukkah. A woman is putter from lulav. A woman is putter from tzitzis and tefillin, because it's zman gerama, you don't do it at night. So it is a rule that women are putter from time-bound commandments, but there are many, many, many exceptions. There, Hanukkah is an exception, too. Right? So it's either a drasha or it's a svara, whatever. I mean, on the rabbinic commandments, we have a svara that they were also in the miracle. They were in the miracle of Purim. They were in the miracle of Hanukkah, etc. Okay, well, we'll stop there and take care.
Thank you very much. Yeah.